Family discount. Just to mention that next week, Chag HaPesach, Chabal in Latova, there will be no shir, and we'll meet again, Mitzvah Hashem, in 2 weeks' time. In the meanwhile, we turn our attention to Pesach again, and I'd like to address one or two elements of one of the central mitzvahs of Seder night, which is the mitzvah itself to tell the story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's one of the mitzvahs, the only two mitzvahs actually that are d'oraisa nowadays for the Seder, temporarily. That is the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, one of the 613, and also the first kezias of matzah, also by Erev Tochlu Matzos. The others are d'rabbanan and plenty more. And I'd like to address two questions that relate to this mitzvah, and also we'll see they relate to the Haggadah as well. As we know, at a certain point in Magid, we begin to address the timing for the mitzvah. The source for the mitzvah is Vihigadato Levincha, Vayomahu Leimor, etc. And the Haggadah famously hones it down. Yochel Mirash Chodesh, I might have thought the mitzvah to tell the story begins from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. After all, the Torah refers to the entire month, Ki Bechodesh Ha'aviv Yatzasa Mimitzrayim. One may have thought that it is the season already from the beginning of the month. Talmud Lomar, to that end, the Torah says, no, Yigadata Levincha Bayom Hahu. It's specifically on that day. But our work is not finished. Because, okay, that day, when on that day? Ibayomahu, Yochel Miba Ojo. I might have thought that the mitzvah begins from earlier in the day. Talmud Lomar, so to that end, the Torah further refines and specifies Ba'avor Zeh. Ba'avor Zeh, as we know, Lo Amarti Ela Bishar Sheish Matza Umoror Munachim Lefanecha. The basis of the lesson here is that the word Zeh always refers to something physical that you can point to. And therefore, Ba'avor Zeh, there must be physical objects here. In this instance, the matzah and the moror. Interestingly, Mefarshim raised the question. Yochel Mirash Chodesh, I may have thought that to tell the story from the beginning of Rosh Chodesh, because it's the whole month of redemption. From a certain point of view, the redemption is from the beginning of the month. But no, it's that day. But if it's that day, in other words, we're insistent on the actual day of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Ba'avor Zeh, Asa Hashem B'tzeisim Mitzrayim, what room then is there for me to think that it would be from earlier in the day? I mean, earlier in the day is not yet the day that we left Mitzrayim. So what is behind what we call the Hava Amina, what we may have thought that there is a mitzvah already earlier, prior to the 15th, actually yet on the 14th. And Rishonim explain that one may have thought that it is yet an appropriate time earlier in the day, because although we hadn't left, but the afternoon of the 14th, it's Pesach already in a sense, that it's the time of the bringing of the Korban Pesach. So from that point of view, the day has arrived in that respect. One may have thought that there's already a mitzvah to tell the story of Pesach from the time of the bringing of the Korban Pesach, and therefore Talmud Lomar, rather Ba'avor Zeh, is the night B'shar Sheish Matza Umor Mersham Lefanech. Okay, so that's a bit of background in terms of this paragraph of the Haggadah. The Rambam, as he discusses this mitzvah in his Sefer Mitzvahs, mitzvah, positive mitzvah, Kuf Nun Hei, adds a couple of words of explanation. He discusses the timing, of course, he discusses all the basic elements of every mitzvah there, and therefore he brings this limud, which is actually sourced in the Mechilta. I might have thought from Rosh Chodesh, I might have thought Miba Od Yom, Talomar, Ba'avor Zeh, B'shar Sheish Matzo Umar Menachem Lefanecha, says the Rambam adds three extra words, Kilomar, as if to say, Mitchilas HaLaila, from the beginning of the night. Now these words of the Rambam, these extra three explanatory words, could be taken on a very simple level, just to be sure that we're completely clear, it's not Mibaod Yom, it's specifically from the beginning of the night. But the Netziv, in his commentary Imre Shefer on Haggadah Shel Pesach, explains that there's actually much more to what the Rambam is saying. Kolomar mitchilas halayla, from the beginning of the night. And the Netziv raises an interesting shaila. We have finally arrived at an understanding that the time for the mitzvah is described as b'sha'a sheish matzah u'moro munachan mefanecha, at a time matzah and moro are before you. Now, what exactly does that mean? If we consider, we will appreciate that there may be more than one of two ways to understand these words, b'sha'a sheish matzah u'moro munachan mefanecha. Are they a signpost? As if to say, the time that one has matzah and maror, that is to say, the time that these mitzvahs are operational, which is the 15th of Nisan. Or could it be that the Haggadah is actually saying more than that? Could it be that the defining the time as when matzah and maror are in front of you, perhaps matzah and maror are there not merely as a time stamp, but actually as an essential requirement, as a condition precedent to the actual mitzvah of telling the story? The Haggadah says, Ba'avrozeh is only applies when there's matzah and maror in front of you. Let's posit an interesting shaila. What if a person is there on the 15th of Nisan, and for some reason, he doesn't have matzah and maror in front of him? He couldn't get hold of matzah, not only to his satisfaction in terms of the hechsher, he couldn't get hold of matzah at all. So he's there at the time, but he doesn't have the items. Is there still a mitzvah? That's an interesting question. Do we take the words of the Haggadah literally, that you need the presence of matzah and maror for the mitzvah, or not? Says the Netziv, it is to this end the Rambam proceeded to further explain, kilomar mitrilas halayla, as if to say from the beginning of the night. What the Rambam means to say is that this drasha with matzah and maror in front of you does not mean to present them as a requirement, their actual presence for the mitzvah, but rather they're merely there to tell you when does the mitzvah apply. Mitilas hayla, of course one should have matzah and maror, even if one doesn't, the mitzvah still applies. So it's all about timing, essentially. However, says the Netziv, it's an interesting shayla. And how does the Rambam know? Maybe it really is true. Maybe we should take the words of the Haggadah literally, at their word, that you need matzah and maror. So the Netziv says in a very elegant manner that the way the Rambam knows this is because, look back to the Pasuk. It began with a very broad possibility and got progressively narrower. We may have thought from Rosh Chodesh, Talmud Lomar, so the Torah says, Bayom Hahu, on that day. We may have thought even earlier on the day. Talmud Lomar, no, not earlier in the day. Specifically, Ba'avorzeh, which means at a time, Sheish Matzah U'moror Munachem Lefanecha. Now, says the Netziv, let's consider. Once we know the specific time within the day, namely, specifically, B'shar Sheish Matzah U'moror Munachem Lefanecha, so let's ask backwards. Why then do we need the interim words of Bayom Hahu? Had the Pasuk said only Bayom Hahu, I would have thought it could be early in the day, maybe it's tomorrow, who knows when in the day. But once you told me when in the day, I don't need to be told the day. Just say, we can imagine, V'higadata levincha lemor ba'avorzeh, and that's matzah u'moror, and as they say in the classics, cut to the chase, matzah u'moror, munachum nefanecha. Looking back, what do we need the words Bayom Hahu? They seem to be merely a transitional phrase. What do they mean ultimately? Says the Netziv, the reason why the Torah has to say Bayom Hahu at the end of the day is because if it only said Ba'avrozeh, I may have thought that you need the matzah and maror in front of you. Because if all you have to define the mitzvah is the presence of the matzah and maror, perhaps their presence is critical for the mitzvah. That's why, as much as they define the time, but the Torah nonetheless says, Bayom Hahu, to tell you at the end of the day, pardon the expression, it's the beginning of the night. It's the timing that's critical and defined, it's time-stamped by the matzah and maror. Interestingly, we should note, as much as what we're saying is certainly the consensus, this drush, as we mentioned, also features in the Michilta. Many pieces of what we have in the Haggadah originate in the Michilta, and actually, in the Michilta, the version is slightly different with regards to this drasha. It reads, Talmud Lomar, Bavurzeh. Bavurzeh lo amarti, ela b'shar sheish matza umoror munachim lefanecha al shulchanecha. The Michilta adds those words, which is interesting, because the Michilta is not telling me how to set up my table. Lefanecha presumably means on the table, and if it's not on the table, it's going to be somewhere nearby. What does the Michilta mean to intimate by adding these words al shulchanecha? It seems, says the Brisker Rav, that according to the Michilta, they really are a requirement. Their presence is needed to activate the mitzvah. Lefanecha al shulchanecha, they literally need to be in front of you. However, as Rav Zalti points out, Jaivitz, our Haggadah, our version of the Haggadah doesn't have those words al shulchanecha. It may even be a machlokas as to whether it's just the time or you need the presence of the matzah and maror. We should also note, coming from a different angle, as we know, the matzah is referred to as lechem oni. Lechem oni we translate as bread of affliction or bread of poverty. The Gemara has a number of drushes on the matzah as lechem oni, and one of them is, as we know, Psachim daf lamed vav, lechem she'onim alav devarim harbe, from the word ania, to respond and to speak. And therefore, interestingly, from that point of view, it really sounds like the matzah is the basis of the mitzvah. Onim alav devarim harbe. It's critical. Its presence is to the fulfillment of the mitzvah. That's perhaps another tributary towards this idea. And moreover, says the Brisker Rav, there is a very interesting episode. It's recounted in the Tosefta, in the end of Maseches Psachim. It's a maisa. It's not the Maisa that we're familiar with from the Haggadah of Maisa Rebbe Lezer with Rabbi Rebbe Kiva in Bnei Brak. It's actually a Maisa that took place somewhere else. This is the lesser discussed Seder. It took place in Lud. And this is how it is presented. Maaseh B'Rabbel. Interestingly, Gamliel is the only one who's is very significantly absent from the Seder there, with everyone there except for Rabbi Gamliel. He's over here, not that they're necessarily in the same year. But this is Rabbi Gamliel Seder. Maaseh B'Rabbi Gamliel Uzekenim, who are not mentioned by name. Shahayu Mesubim Bebeis Baitos Ben Zunin Belud. So Rabbi Gamliel and his colleagues, so they were Mesubim there in Lud. Vayu Asukim Behilchas HaPesach Kol HaLaida, and they were involved in Pesach the whole night. Ad Kros HaGever, until the morning. Okay. Then it says, Higbihu milifnehem. People came in and raised up from before them. That's a very enigmatic phrase. Higbihu milifnehem. V'noadu v'holchelen lebeis ha-medrash. And then the Seder was over, and they went to the Beis HaMedrash and began Pesach morning. So aside from the many aspects there are to comment on this Maisa, certainly comparing and contrasting with the more famous Maisa in the Haggadah, but many Mefarshim are wondering what is the meaning and significance of these two words, Higbihu Lifnehem. They raised up. What did they raise up, and how did that change things? And again, the Brisker Rav says, it seems from here that the Tosefta is telling us that the Seder requires the presence of the Matzah and Maror, which means instead of just telling them the Seder's over, whoever it is that came in, when they raised up, and that is to say, took away, cleared away the Seder plate with the matzah and the maror, so then automatically the Seder stopped because there is no b'shar sheish matzah u'maror, menachem lefanecha. So this is a very interesting approach that we see, seems to be supported from a number of places in Chazal. Indeed, we do like to have the matzah before us, we're makbid to have the matzah before us, and revealed, uncovered, during the time of the Sipur. In fact, there is a certain back and forth that exists between the matzah and the wine. That's the rule of thumb. Whenever the matzah is uncovered, or when we pick up the wine, that's when you cover the matzah. But as soon as you put the wine down, let's say for Vihisha Amda or whatever, or the brachas, that's when you cover the matzah. But when the wine isn't held up, the matzah is uncovered because of lechem oni, lechem she'onim olav. However, certainly, I think the consensus, la halacha, is that if a person doesn't have matzah, or if they ate all their matzah, there's still a mitzvah to talk about the Yetzias Mitzrayim, even beyond that point. And this leads us into the second question, which we mentioned almost in passing, and that is the Tosefta, as it describes this Maisa, at least the version of Tosefta that we have in front of us, once again says you had the Maisa of Rabbi Gamliel and the Zekenim, they were there in Lud, Vayu Asukim Behilchos HaPesach Kol HaLaila. They involved themselves in the Halachos of Pesach the whole night. That's very interesting, because as far as we know, the mitzvah of the night was what's called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story of leaving Mitzrayim. It's true, there are many halachas of the night, and there is a general mitzvah to talk about Hilchos Chag B'Chag, but as a value or as a mitzvah to discuss the halachas of Pesach as part of the night, that's very interesting. It's apparently, that's also part of the mitzvah, discussing the halachas, even though it's not a story. And in fact, The Tosefta said earlier, Chai of Adam, Lasuk Behilchos HaPesach, Kol HaLaila, Afilu Beino Lebeino, etc., and then brings in the Maisa. So it's very emphatic that there is this parallel Chiyuv of being involved in the Halachas. And in fact, based on this Tosefta, the Shulchan Aruch, Paskins, in Simen Taf Pei Aleph, Si'if Beis, Chayev Adam, Lasuk Behilchos HaPesach, Uvi Yetzias Mitzrayim, Ulesaper V'nissim V'niflaos. You see, the Shulchan Aruch has really combined them. We are aware that the mitzvah is to tell the story. The Tosefta told us that the mitzvah is to be involved in the halachas. And the Shulchan Aruch really puts it together. That it's a combination. One shouldn't be involved in the halachas and in the story. Ad Shetachtefenu Shena, until he is snatched by sleep, which is a very interesting halacha, and for those that can do it after Seder, some people are snatched away by other things after the Seder, and Shachris on the first day of Pesach is also part of the Chag, but the Shulchan Aruch says achetachtefenu shenus, so he codifies the mitzvah of being involved in the halachas. That's a chiddush for us. The halachas is part of the night. On a simple level, in a sense, we see it in the Haggadah. One of the four sons, on the simplest of interpretations, the Chacham, he's asking a halachic shaila, maha edus, vachukim, vamishpatim. I mean, that could mean anything. But the answer that we give him is a halacha. And some say you teach him all of the halachas up until and including the final halacha, which is so it's interesting because whereas for the Tam and the Ein Yodei Lishol, so they're not halachically engaged, you tell them the story and that, but it seems for the Chacham there is part of the story is to talk about the halachas. And the Mechilta actually derives from this verse, Mikan Shechayev Adam Lasuk Bichas HaPesach. The question is, if we may ask, why? Or why would it be so? Given that the mitzvah is to tell the story, there's always a mitzvah to be involved in halachas, kol lashona halachas b'chol yom, but it doesn't seem to have part or be part of the mitzvah of the evening. I wonder whether perhaps a very simple answer to this question is in the pasuk itself. The source of the mitzvah is v'higadata levincha bayomahu leimor, which is to tell the story. But how does the pasuk continue? Ba'avurzeh osa shalni b'tzeisi mimitzrayim. It is for this, and this of course refers to matzah and maror, representing all mitzvahs. Rashi says in his Perush on the Chumash, ba'avur she'akayim mitzvosav kemo pesach matzah u'maror, which means that the Torah, and it's just translating the words, the mitzvah of the Torah is not just to tell the story. The mitzvah of the Torah is to say why. Why? Not just that Hashem took us out, which is the story. But why did Hashem take us out? He took us out for mitzvahs. Which means, in a sense, being involved in the halachas of the evening are actually a function and a natural progression of the story. They are the ba'avor of the ba'avor zeh. And therefore, they, in their way, they are indeed part of the story. So these are some very interesting questions that relate to the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, we have been having Shiurim on the Haggadah for something like 18 or 19 years. We've never gotten past the second cup of wine. And I had an inclination for a while now to try and push further, which I don't think will be possible. The way I felt we could ensure that we would get to the end is to start at the end, which means I would like to take a look just for a few moments at the very end of the Seder, specifically the piyutim, the songs, Echad Miyodea, Chadgadya. It's very difficult to know exactly what they're doing. And moreover, that deep into the Seder, no one really asks at that time what they're doing, whatever they say. If it, after the fourth cup of wine, whatever's on the page, that's what happens. But if we could get a bit of an insight, a bit of a sense of where these piyutim, they're not from the Haggadah proper, that is to say they're from the Middle Ages, more from Arzos Ashkenaz, but they're for us, they're part of the Seder, and they're contributing to read what the evening is about. So if we begin with Echad Miyodea, okay, what does that mean? It's easy to sing, and the mood is much lighter, I think, at this stage, and therefore it goes very, very freely. But what exactly are we asking? Echad miyodea, echad miyodea. This is one. This is two. This is three. What's the entry into the Haggadah here? So one of the Meforshim called the Ateres Yeshua explains very beautifully that echad miyodea, who knows one, who knows two, is discussing in this way, in this piyut type of way, the various merits and the various contributing factors that led to Yetzias Mitzrayim. For they are many, and they are varied. And it is in this song way that we express them and mention them. And he goes through them, and let's go through them just to have this sense of Echad Miyodea. So, of course, Echad Elokeinu Shebashamayim Uva'aretz, the primary zchus, which allowed us to leave Mitzrayim, was our attachment and allegiance to and connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That took the form of the Korban Pesach, where we repudiated and distanced ourselves from all forms of Avodah Zarah. We took the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim and shechted it and expressed our allegiance to Echad Elokeinu b'shamayim v'aretz. That's the primary zchus. A number of the numbers here refer to Torah. And the principle behind this, as Rashi comments, when Moshe originally asks, Mi anochi ki alech al paro, v'chi yotzias yisrael mi Mitzrayim, who am I? And who are the Jewish people that they will leave? Rashi explains, Ezes chus yesh lehem, that they should leave. The Jewish people didn't really have that many merits at the time. The answer, part of the answer to that question was, Behotziacha es ha'am mi Mitzrayim, Tavdunes ha'alokim ala har hazeh. When you leave Mitzrayim, you will come here, al har hazeh. This is Chorev, this is Sinai. It's about Kabbalah HaTorah. Which means, interestingly, one of the merits that we had to leave Mitzrayim was an advance on making good on that merit, which is for the purpose of Kabbalah HaTorah, and that itself retroactively was a contributing zechus. And therefore, Shnei Luchos Sabris, which is Matan Torah, that's the zechus of Tavdunes ha'alokim. Then we come to numbers 3 and 4, which are Shlosha Avos and Arba Imahos. The Medrash Shir Hashirim tells us that, of course, we always use and need and require a Zechus Avos, but the Zechus of the Avos and the Imahos was instrumental in terms of affecting our release from Mitzrayim, which, remember, was somewhat early in strict terms. And that's the pasuk in Shir Hashirim called Odi Hinei Zeba Medalik Al Horim Mikapet Al Gvoz. The Horim and the Gvoz, the mountains and the hills, there are the way that the Navi refers to the Avos and the Imahos. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is jumping and he's skipping. That is to say, he's skipping over time. And that was one of the zechuyos for Bnei Yisrael in the zechus of the Shlosha Avos and the Arba Imahos. Numbers 5 and 6 are Chamisha Chamisha Torah, Shisha Sidre Mishnah, which once again bring us back to Matan Torah. Number 7, Shiva Yimei Shabta. So the Medrash tells us that actually the Jewish people began to keep Shabbos in Mitzrayim. Moshe intuited the idea of Shabbos. He came to Paro, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, and said to him, if you work them 7 days a week, that they will grind to a halt, and you'll get lesser returns on your investment. So if they have 1 day off a week, so then they'll come back refreshed. And the day that he chose was Shabbos, not yet knowing that Shabbos actually was Shabbos, that he later found out. And that's the background to Yismach Moshe b'Matnas Chelko. That's the joy of Moshe that when they received the Shabbos, and he himself was mechaven to that day of the week. And this was itself part of chus for them to leave Mitzrayim. Number 8 is Shmoni Yimei Mila. And as we know, the Mila was something that we received at the time of the Korban Pesach, b'damayi chayi. It's a required in order to be able to eat from the Korban Pesach, and it was also therefore a twin zchus together with the Korban to leave Mitzrayim. Number 9, Tisha Yarcheleido. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota, it's a famous statement in the Gemara, bizchus noshim tzadkonios, zochi Yisrael lotzeis mimitzrayim. It's the merit is actually accrues more to the women than to the men, because the men came back from their backbreaking labor, they were exhausted, and they were dispirited, and they didn't feel there was any point in bringing another generation of Jewish people into the world. It's their wives that encouraged them, and they were the ones that had that vision that yet the Jewish people should continue, and they did, and that's Tisha Yarcheleido itself, that optimism and that determination is one of the zechuyos. Number 10 is Asara Dibraya, Asara Sadibros, Pacta Matan Torah. Numbers 11 and 12 are the brothers, Achadasar Kochavaya and Shneimasar Shivtaya, the stars in Yosef's dream and the Shvatim. And the Ateras Yeshua explains interestingly that the Shvatim also had a certain role as Shvatim, because every Shevet has his own distinct personality or distinct characteristics, and it's because the Jewish people preserved their distinctive ways, as we say, Loshinam Shemam, Loshonam and Mabusham, etc. They didn't yet have mitzvahs, but they had a sense of identity, and they kept faithful to it. In fact, this gives us, I think, a new insight into Yaakov's brachas, which we know in general were as a kind of a chizuk for the Jewish people going into Golus Mitzrayim. But one of the primary aspects of chizuk is that he showed each Shevet what his uniqueness is. And therefore, the more each group, each tribe felt that it was unique, the more it held on to that, preserved it, and retained its distinction, which was also one of the zechuyos, Sheloshinu. They didn't dissolve, because they had a very specific sense of identity. And finally, it brings us to Shloshas or Shloshas Amidaya, which is the Shloshas Amidos Sharachamim. As we know, all of the very often catalysts or zechuyos, they work together. There's the synergy between them. Rachamim is not a carte blanche that we have nothing going, but Hashem has mercy on us. Normally, it has catalysts, it has triggers. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says at least the following, and then Hashem responds with rachamim. And therefore, al kulana, with all of the above, we are still officially 190 years early, but in the schus of everything else, combined with the shloshes midaya, Hashem's midas rachamim, that's what brought us out of Mitzrayim. So I think it's a whole new insight, really, into the song, Echad miyodea, Shnai miyodea, to have a sense of what it's doing on Seder night. It's about Seder night. That's the Perush of the Ateres Yeshua, which I think is very wonderful. As a P.S. to Echad Miyodea, because even the way the song is phrased is interesting. We don't just come in linearly and say, there's Echad Elokeinu. It becomes with a question. Who knows one? And I know one. It's a whole back and forth. And I know two. And I know three. What's behind that question? Shlosha Miyodea, Arba Miyodea. Rabbi Avraham Gurwitz, the Rosh Hashiva of Gateshead, explains that in a sense the evening has been leading up to this question. Numbers are very interesting because they're neutral. In a sense, you can tell a lot of a person by what certain numbers mean to them. It's just a number, arithmetically, but where a person's interest lies, that's what will come to mind when you mention a significant number for him. There are certain people that they're obsessed with a certain game or whatever it may be, or a pastime, and the highest number there for them, when they hear that number, that's what they think of. Other people, they're involved in finance, knee-deep, or more, and they follow the interest rate. So when they hear whatever number it is, for them, that's the current rate, and so it is. So in a sense, you take a neutral entity, and you ask the question, who knows what this means? Meaning, what should this conjure up if you just hear that number? In a sense, the Seder evening, it's schooling for us in terms of reattaching ourselves to the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit. And a symptom of a successful Seder is to ask that question. Echad miyodeh, when you hear the number one now, or when you hear the number two or number three, what will spring to mind? It's a defining question. Shlosha miyodeya. Who knows what three really means? What do you think it means? Because that is a symptom of how much the Seder has impacted us. So that's Reb Avraham Gurewitz with regards to the language of numbers. So from Echad miyodeya we come to Chad Gadya, and Chad Gadya certainly needs to be reckoned with. Again, it's the final song. Everyone, I'm sure, every house has their customs and their idiosyncrasies when it comes to this song, but it needs to be understood as well. In fact, the only halachic tshuva that relates to Chad Gadya was sent to the Chidah, whereby someone in the times of the Chidah, he one of the members of his kehila was making a mockery of Chad Gadya, and the Rav put him in Cherem. And after Yom Tov, he sent a letter to the Chidah just to confirm that what he did was in order, perhaps it was excessive, and the Chidah responded and said it's 100% in order, to make fun of something that's from Rishonim, that's absolutely unacceptable, you are completely within your bounds to do so. So, with that sobering setting of the tone for Chad Gadya, let's take a look at one of the many Pirushim. Essentially, there's a whole school that understands that Chad Gadya is in its way a portrayal or a depiction through these characters of the history of the Jewish people. And that's how we clued from beginning to end. The Vilna Gaon discusses in this vein, and so does the Aruch HaShulchan and many others. I would like to take the approach, and they're very similar to each other, but of the Perush Yad Mitzrayim. The Yad Mitzrayim is a Perush on the Haggadah written by Rabbi Isaac Chover. Rabbi Isaac Chover was himself from the Beis HaMedrash of the Vilna Gaon. And he explains, Chad Gadya, who's the goat? Well, the goat is the Jewish people. Why are they a goat? The Jewish people are referred to as Hashem's flock, Atem Soni, Tzon Marisi, and he's called Chad Gadya, and that's an emphasis, Chad Gadya, because the Jewish people, as we say, Mika Amcha Yisrael, Goy Echad Ba'aret, so it's the unique goat. But specifically, says Rabbi Isaac Chover, and of course there's plenty of commentary, why a goat and not a sheep? The Jewish people are more of a goat, typically. Goats are willful and they're stubborn and they get up to all sorts of things. And that's how the Jewish people are. And in a sense, it's the result of a lot of their trouble. It's also the result of a lot of their survival and their resilience and a lot of their achievements. And we need it. It just needs to be tempered by the Torah. Az Shebu'umos. Az Milashon Eis. Okay, so we're the Chad Gadya, and we've been purchased by Father for two Zuzim. Which two Zuzim are those? So Isaac Chover says, I mean, our Father is Hashem. Dizabin Abba, he's acquired us. That means our connection to him, as we discussed at length 1 or 2 weeks ago, comes through Korbanos. The annual connection, every Jew is connected to Hashem through the Korbanos. Through the Machtes HaShekel, that's his contribution, and that's what connects him to the Jewish people and through them to Hashem. The Machtes HaShekel is two Zuz. The Shekel HaKodesh has four Zuzim, and therefore the Trei Zuzei is the half of the Shekel, the Machtes HaShekel. With that, we become connected to Hashem during the when we have those korbanos. Fine. So there we begin. The Jewish people, just as they begin. Then, before long, va'asa shunra. Shunra, the cat, says Rabbi Isaac Chover, refers to the troubles between Yosef and the brothers. The pasuk says va'yikan ubo echav. They were jealous of him, and that strife, that tension, that it's a harsh thing to say, but I mean it was a harsh situation. That cat-like manner, lahavdil, led the Jewish people down to Egypt. They threatened to consume Yosef. Va'asa shunra va'ochil agadjel. But if they consume Yosef, essentially they were threatening to dissolve the entire Jewish people that early on. That's part of the reason they were sent to Mitzrayim. And who did they meet there? Va'asa kalba nashach l'shunra. So the dog comes, he bites the cat. The dog is pyro, right? The mechutzah of the dog always has represents chutzpah. Azka kelev also. Kelev asher b'chayos, the Gemara says in Beitz and Daf Kafei, paro mi Hashem asher shma b'kolo. He's not interested, defies everyone, stubborn in that way, and he bit the cat. And then what? Well, va'asa chutra v'hikula kalba. The staff comes and administers blows to the dog. The staff, says of Isaac Chaver, is mate Moshe. That's the osos. That's the instrument through which Hakadosh Baruch Hu told him to perform the makos, as we say, ves ha'osos de hamate, and therefore the chutra represents the punishment, the retribution for Paro. And thus, we left. Then, something happened which threatened to undermine actually Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. And that's ve'asa nura. Fire came to burn the stick. The fire, says Rabbi Isaac Chover, refers to the Egel Hazav, which was formed through fire. And it's pivotal now and central in those parshios, and we barely recovered from it, and we were going to be destroyed, etc. That's the fire that threatened essentially to consume Yetzias Mitzrayim, just to consume the everything that was affected by the matter of Moshe. But the fire was extinguished. Ve'asa maya v'chiba lanura. The water came, and the water refers to the tefillos of Moshe. As we say, Shifchi kamayim libeich, he poured out his heart, his soul, like water, and his tefillos affected a kapara for us, and therefore the fire of the Egel was put out by the water of Moshe's tefillos. And thus, we were able to enter into Mitzrayim. But then, the point of things began to unravel for us, is Va'asa Torah v'shasalamaya. The ox came and drank the water. Who's the ox? Now we know that the egel is sometimes referred to in the psukim as an ox. I mean, it's from the ox family, betavnis shor. And although we'd finished, we'd put the egel behind us, but they were resurrected by Yeravam ben Nevat. He's the first one to secede, to break the Jewish people in half. He stopped them from coming down to Mitzrayim by putting two egels, two agolim, in their way. And that led, number one, to a major division within the Jewish people. And moreover, it began to promote on a nationwide level Yeravam Chotov Hechtias HaRabim Avodah Zarah, which was one of the primary contributing causes to the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, which means that everything that had been put back in place by the water of Moshe's tefillos to put the Jewish people back on track, successful into Eretz Yisrael, was then drunk by the ox, by the eagles of Yeravam. And Avodah Zarah had us thrown out. But then we came back. And when we came back, we say, Va'asa shochet, v'shochet l'Torah. So someone came and slaughtered the ox. What does that mean? The Gemara tells us in two places that the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, when they came back, they assessed that the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah would be, it got the Jewish people thrown out the first time, it could wreak havoc again the second time. They felt they were unable to deal with it, and they davened that it should be nullified. And they are referred to as having shechted the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. That's why nowadays it almost doesn't exist. Other Yetzer Haras exist, but this doesn't really exist. And it's because of that, which means at the very least they negated this as a damaging force for the second Beis HaMikdash. That's the shochet that that killed the ox set in motion by Yeravam. And everything seemed on track, except something else happened. The Malach HaMoves came and killed the Shochet. And the Malach HaMoves of Isaac Chover is the Sinas Chinam that destroyed the second base of Mikdash. Much as they were able to achieve by destroying the Yetzirah for Avodah Zorah, and it sounds like everything's all clear, what could possibly go wrong? Sinas Chinam took its place and actually killed the Shochet. That means it undid their work. And what's very interesting is that it sounds like Sinas Chinam, in a sense, is a throwback to Avodah Zorah. Because if it undid their work to kill the Yetzirah for Avodah Zorah, that means it replaced it, in a sense. And that, I think, is backed up by what the Gemara says, that when a person gets angry, they're essentially worshipping themselves. When a person gets angry at people, lo yeh v'cha el zar. There's the foreign deity that exists within the person, is the person himself. So self-worship, which is the basis of sinas chinam, took the place of idol worship, which meant the Jewish people were thrown out again. And the final note that we end off on, which is, we say it in the past, but of course we're looking towards the future. As we mentioned last week, all of Seder night begins in the past and then ends up looking towards the future. V'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shochat l'malach HaMoves, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to put an end to the Sinas Chinam, which will allow us to come back to the full Geula Shelema. So this is truly wonderful, I think. It's a completely different experience now to have this insight into these songs, Echad Miyadea. The atmosphere will always be one of festivity, but just to have a sense of where these songs are coming from. Okay. And from there, we come back to the story. At the center of the story are children. That the story is phrased that way, Vihigalata Levincha Bayomahu Leimor. And it's about talking to them. On a simple level, the goal of the story is that children should know. So they are the beneficiaries of the story. They didn't know before, but now they know. But as we know, the story goes way beyond children. And even if they know the story, they hear it again. And even if there's no children, the adults tell the story between themselves. And still, children are not critical to the story, but they're still the focus of the story. So what does that mean? The Shem Yishmuel quotes a well-known statement of the Arizal, very enigmatic, not surprisingly, and that is that one of the things that was in exile, not only were the Jewish people in exile when we were in Mitzrayim, but Dibur was in exile, speech was in exile. Which means that part of leaving Mitzrayim was not only redeeming the Jewish people, but was redeeming speech. And that's why he famously says that Pesach is a contraction of Pesach, where the mouth speaks, and the mitzvah, the kolamar belesaper. But it's a very difficult thing to understand. What does that mean, that Dibur, speech, is in exile and it's redeemed? How does it get into exile, and how does it redeemed? And the Shem Yishmuel says, no doubt there are many, many layers of depth, but he presents an explanation which I think is foundational. The concept of galus is distance. It is possible for a person's words to be distant from the person. That's called galus. When are a person's words distant from the person? When the person doesn't stand behind them, when the person is not emotionally invested in them, when the person either doesn't believe what he's saying or doesn't care about what he's saying, l'havdil, we have that notion. We would say that I spoke to Plony, but I felt he was distant. He was still talking to me, but I didn't really feel that he was there, because he's not interested. When a person is emotionally dormant, there is no person then. There's no personality in anything that they're saying. But the words are still there, but they're detached in that way. And that's why we say that they are in exile. And this, unfortunately and understandably, was the situation of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. Their words were distant from themselves, because the tzoras of the galus required that they shut down emotionally. They couldn't allow themselves to be emotionally awake and alert and sensitive, because those sensitivities were being trampled on a daily basis and crushed. And that's really what Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Vayechi. Parshas Vayechi is a Parsha Stuma. It's closed up. Why? Because the Jewish people closed up. Nistamu einehem velibam shel Yisrael mitzoros hagolas sheshchilu l'shabdam. That when the tzoros began, the Jewish people, they closed up. They shut down. They had no choice. They couldn't go through that trauma every day. They became dulled and jaded. But it's impossible to stay that way. It's not acceptable to stay that way. Not only because it's not a good way to be. It's antithetical to the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's important to talk about it, because unfortunately, Baruch Hashem, everyone has a Seder, or many, it's very, very widespread. But for many people, the Seder is a negative experience, in the sense that they celebrate freedom only in a negative way. That is to say, not that, not slaves, but in a positive way, and therefore you are what? That's a question which is very often left blank. It's a question that people still struggle with. It's the question mark of freedom. But the Torah is very emphatic that the Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just to be not slaves to Paro. It's to be then available to be, yes, Avdei Hashem. Asher Yotzeis Yeschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim for a purpose. Li Yos Lachem L'Elokim. That's the tachlis of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is a central part of Seder night, therefore, as well. It's a central part of the story. But if that's true, then in order to make good on the tachlis, on the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the heart of the Jewish people will need to be reopened. It will need to be reawakened. It will need to be revived. Because you can't have a relationship with Hashem. You can't be Jewish if you don't have a Jewish heart that's active and functioning. If you're emotionally shut down, that's not Torah. That's not Kabbalah Satorah. And therefore, in order to provide for the basis of what Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about, the Jewish people had to be redeemed emotionally. They had to be revived spiritually as well. And this gives us a sense, first of all, it opens up for us two channels, really, within Yetzias Mitzrayim. There were two parallel geulas going on. There's the physical, political geula from slavery in Egypt to free from them. And there is the spiritual geula which runs alongside it, essentially on top of it, to take us out from that depressed state where we're incapable of being Hashem's people to becoming His people. And this gives us new insight into many of the aspects of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Eser Makos are there not only to punish the Egyptians. The Eser Makos are there to raise the spirits of the Jewish people, to put ourselves back into that year where the Jewish people have been made to feel worthless for decades, if not longer, and all of a sudden the world has never seen anything like this before, and it's for them. And they regain a sense of self-worth, and they regain a they begin to come alive again, culminating in Kriyas Yamsuf. And that state of exaltation as a Jewish people came out of the other side of the Yam Suf was as much an emotional rehabilitation as it was a security issue in terms of no more threats for Mitzrayim. And in fact, this explains to us an interesting Rashi at the end of Parshas Shelach. The Torah there talks about tzitzis. Rashi's final comment on the mitzvah of tzitzis is from Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. It's an excursion. And Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan explains that every aspect of the mitzvah of tzitzis corresponds to an element of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the eight threads of tzitzis correspond to the 8 days from when we left Mitzrayim until we sang Shira by the Yam Suf. So says Rashi. Of course, Mefarshi Rashi are quick to point out, Mizrahi and others, Rashi himself has told us in Parshas Beshalach, and we know it to be true, there were not 8 days between Yetzias Mitzrayim, when we left Mitzrayim, and Kriyas Yamsuf. There were seven. It happened on Shviyi Shel Pesach. We left on the 15th of Nisan, and that happened on the seventh day. Why is Rashi saying that there were 8 days? 8 days. And Maharal and others explain that when you talk about, when Rashi's talking about the 8 days from Yetzias Mitzrayim, he's not talking about physically leaving Mitzrayim. He's reckoning the 8 days from the beginning, which is actually the day before when we bring the Korban Pesach. From the Korban Pesach on the 14th until Kriyas Yom Suf on the 21st. So that is, those are your 8 days. The question is, why do we move the clock back to Korban Pesach when it comes to talking about the amount of days between leaving Mitzrayim and then the end of that process of Geula? How come sometimes it's from the 15th when we left, sometimes from the 14th when we bring the Korban Pesach? So the Maharal in Sefer Gevuras Hashem has an amazing comment with regard to the Korban Pesach. I think for us, the Korban Pesach is perhaps the lesser spoken of that team of three. Because matzah and maror are about freedom and bitterness, and those are two opposites, and somehow within there you have Korban Pesach also. Of course, it's a mitzvah, and it's many, many things, but the Maharal says, the amazing thing about the Korban Pesach is that it was an activation of our goal status from before we even left. And what that means is, we say that the goal of leaving Mitzrayim, of being going from Avdei Paro, is to become Avdei Hashem. Once we leave, that's where we'll be heading towards. Says Maharal, what do Avdei Hashem do, if we may ask such a simple question? Avdei Hashem do Avodas Hashem. The Korban Pesach was our first experience as Avdei Hashem. It's Avoda, and it's called Avoda repeatedly in those psukim, because we were already activating and applying our status as Avdei Hashem through Avodas Hashem even before we left Mitzrayim. And therefore, this aspect, the process of the spiritual Geula, which begins by acting in the capacity of Avdei Hashem, began a day before we actually left. And that explains why when it comes to tzitzis, which is about reminders for mitzvahs, which is Avodas Hashem, we reckon the time from beginning of Geula till the end, not from when we actually left Mitzrayim on the 15th, but from when we left spiritually on the afternoon before, when we were already entered into our status as Avdei Hashem. On the 14th, it's 8 days, because that's the aspect that tzitzis is relating to our Geula, to become Avdei Hashem. The clock starts a day before for the spiritual aspect of the Geula. And moreover, and this Reb David Cohen says, not only does the clock start earlier, or the calendar start earlier for spiritual Geula, but when does it end? When does the process of Geula end? We know that in physical terms, it began when we left Mitzrayim on the 15th, and ended 7 days later when the Mitzrayim were drowned, and that's the end of that. When did the process of spiritual Geula end? The same time? Says Rav Cohen, not exactly. A few moments afterwards. What does that mean? What did we do after the Egyptians had been drowned and we came out? Az Yashir Moshe Ubnei Yisrael. Az Yashir Moshe, that level and that status of exaltation and of elevation that led us to sing Shira as a nation was the culmination of the spiritual Geula. That began with the bringing of the Korban Pesach 8 days earlier. And that's why Rashi says in Shalach, there's 8 days from when we left Mitzrayim until we sang Shira al Hayam. He doesn't say from when we left until we went through the Yam Suf, until the Yam Suf closed on the Mitzrayim. Says until we sang Shira Alayam, because that's the culmination. So they have different clocks both before and after. The spiritual Geula begins a day before and ends a few moments afterwards, which means the Shira, which in physical terms was a response to the Geula, in spiritual terms was the Geula. It was the high point of the Geula, and that's why Rashi says, commenting on Az Yashir Moshe, Az Allah Belibo Lomar Shira. Yashir is in the future. The idea welled up in his heart to sing Shira. If the idea wells up in your heart to sing Shira, a miracle, it means your heart is back in play. It's been revived. It's been redeemed. I think with this in mind, certainly, we can understand in a new light a couple of matters that we mentioned earlier on. We said, Yochol me Rosh Chodesh. I might have thought that the mitzvah begins from Rosh Chodesh. No, Bayomahu. If it's Bayomahu, Yochol mi ba'od yom, I might have thought it's from the day, from earlier in the day. No, but why might I have thought it was earlier in the day? Mefarshim said, well, that's when you bring the Korban Pesach. Except, well, we're not here to celebrate the doing of performance of mitzvahs, we're here to celebrate the Geula. The Geula didn't happen till the next day. No. From this point of view, the Geula did happen when we brought the Korban Pesach. We are already activating that spiritual element of our Geula. That's why I may have thought the mitzvahs to tell the story. It's already the time of the Geula until we're told to put it off till later on in the evening. It also explains to us in new light why indeed there is a mitzvah to be involved also in the halachas of Pesach on Seder night. As we mentioned before, once we keep in mind the tachlis of the Geula from Mitzrayim is to be Avdei Hashem, so therefore to be involved in the aspects and particulars of that avodah, first and foremost in the Korban Pesach, the avodah of the evening, it's actually a celebration of the Geula itself. And this brings us back to Seder night. Says Hashem Yishmuel, the goal of Seder night is not only to tell the story, it is a yearly rejuvenation and a yearly reawakening and redemption of the Jewish heart. Just as it was when we left Mitzrayim, it needs to happen again every year. And that, says Hashem Yishmuel, is why the focus of Seder night are children. We saw it as being rather one-sided. The children benefit from having the story told to them. But it's much more than that, says Shem Yishmuel. The grown-ups are the ones who benefit. Because the only way you can tell the story, any story to a child, is if you're emotionally invested in the story. If you're not, the child will sense it and will switch off. And even if what you're saying is very interesting and it's the basis of a doctoral thesis and it has full of footnotes and it's fascinating, he's not interested. If you're not in it emotionally, he's not listening. And it's a fascinating point because according to the Shem Yishmuel, the children are held up as the center of Seder night because they're a metric of the emotional engagement of everyone else who's in the Seder. It's only a real Seder. It's only a redemptive Seder emotionally if it could hold the attention of a child. That's when the adults themselves have come back awake. And in a sense, we understand, with this we'll conclude, why Seder night, it's a self-contained from a certain point of view, but it's the beginning of a process, right? From the very next day, we'll begin to count the Omer leading up to Kabbalah Satorah. Because as surely as the Jewish people needed to be redeemed emotionally to get their Jewish heart in order to become Hashem's people, so as we come back to this every year and we're looking forward, building up to Shavuos to receive the Torah again, you have to get your heart back again. And without that, it's not Kabbalah Satorah. The Nase within Nase V'Nishma doesn't happen if you're not fully engaged and fully in. And so it may be fair to say that of all the many other things we could say about Seder night, it is arguably the Rosh Hashanah of the Jewish heart, because that's when we originally were redeemed emotionally, and that's when we're looking to tap into that quality of the evening. On this evening, and Emet Hashem, that should be the beginning of a process building up to Kabbalah Satorah, and from there beyond, and a chizuk for the whole year. We shall all have a kasher.